Welcome to Ahead of the Game, a podcast brought to you by the Digital Marketing Institute. I'm your host, Will Francis, and today I'll be talking to Kevin Reed. Kevin helps people fulfill their potential through applying better routines and practices, amongst other things. With over 20 years of experience in Irish and international business, with an emphasis on business communications training and coaching. We previously talked with him about his life as a career coach and the best advice he'd offer from those experiences. Well, today we're going to zone in on a very specific topic, how to be a professional in your career. Having talked to Kevin before this, he's come up with a handy checklist of the key things to think about, some actionable items that you can check out based on the topics we're going to talk about today. And there's a link to that available in this episode's show notes. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Will. Good to see you again. Good to be back.
It's great to have you back. I really enjoyed our conversations over 3 years ago at the beginning of our podcast's life.
Yes, time did fly and a certain thing got in the way, but we're back. We're back again. Here we are.
We are indeed. And yeah, I learned so much when we last spoke, and no pressure, but I plan on learning, draining much more knowledge from your brain again today. But let's start just with that word, professional. What does it mean in this day and age to be a professional?
Well, it means everything. It's what's expected of you in the workplace. It's not just doing your job well. It's having the capability and the ability to be self-aware and to be in command of every aspect of your working life. It's to be comfortable in yourself. And it takes two things. It takes practice and it takes a huge amount of failure to get it right. And you're going to fail and fail and fail again. But then you will become the professional.
So you think that that failure is unavoidable and a vital component?
That's it. I mean, if you want to learn to do anything, from represent yourself, make a presentation, make a pitch, reprimand someone, encourage someone, whatever it's going to be, it takes practice, right? And it's that element of professionalism that attracts people. So I'll tell you a story of myself. Many, many moons ago, I was making a pitch to a pharma company in West Dublin, and they wanted to see me there at 7 a.m. So I was there really, really early, got out of my car, and I was adjusting my tie in the reflection of the car, and a Coke can bounced past, and I went after the can because that just annoyed me. And I ended up, it blew the whole length of the car park, and I chased this bloody Coke can for a hell of a long way. And then I found the Coke can, put it in a bin, went upstairs and had the meeting. And I didn't realize that the entire senior management team of this ginormous pharma company that had flown in the board from the States as well had been standing watching me. And they did ask, why did you chase the can? I said, I couldn't let it go. So we had a long conversation then about professionalism, doing the right thing and getting the job done properly.
That's very interesting, isn't it? It's true. I think we do judge people by the other things outside of their obvious professional selves, like the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they treat other people.
Totally. Because if you think about it, it's a given. It's an accepted given that you are, if you're here interacting with me, you're a professional. We're both professionals. It's what you add to it. It's what you bring to the table that's extra. The layers of professionalism, they all have to be learned.
Yes, they absolutely do. And I think you're right about that. I really agree. It's the mistakes along the way that make us who we are, and they're the real way to learn, isn't it? You know. Okay, so in terms of someone's actual work practices, what are some of the things that I need to think about in how I deal with other people who unfortunately are a massive part of our working life?
There's a couple of different things. Let's look at time management, communication, diversity, vision and rules. Let's just go through them. So time management, be on time. Professionalism, even on online, you and I started having this conversation a good 10 minutes before we were even due to start the conversation officially. So you're always on time. Being late, especially online, is immensely annoying. That's very unprofessional. If you have to present work on time. Even if you have to, if you're doing a task for someone and you say you're going to give it to them by 4 o'clock the following day, actually give it to them at 12 o'clock the following day. It makes you look better. It's just those little ways of making yourself reflective, being professional. Meet your deadlines, finish your projects and work on time every time. And even then consider how you work. What is your prime time for getting your projects done? Like for myself, it's an unusual prime time. My prime time when I'm working on all cylinders is between 5:30 and 7:30 each night. But for most people, it's first thing in the morning. But I know that's when I'm able to conduct my prime time, get my work done, the stuff I really need to get done. And then there's the one that many people have heard before in terms of time management is Eat the Frog. So it was devised by Mark Twain and sort of refined further by the American Brian Tracy. And the idea is that you get the biggest awkward job of the day done first. And that allows you then to have a good run at the day. And a good example of that is you don't do your emails first, because your emails will distract you and send you in all directions. You do the big job of the day first that needs to be done, then you get your emails.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I seem to remember talking to you about, and I've talked to others about those very things as well. And I think it's funny, in the 3 years since we last spoke, maybe I'm being optimistic, but I do think more workplaces recognise that not everyone works best between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. and that also people have kids to pick up and from school, you know, and other personal commitments like staying healthy and getting outside to see some daylight, especially in winter, right? So I'm optimistic about us moving towards a place where it's okay to just work when you have, you know, your best self available. Do you think that's realistic?
Oh, totally. And there's more, and you've hit the nail on the head. There's more understanding now because we're all working from home, more of us are working from home, that there's flexibility is almost guaranteed. And that's what works for us.
Yes.
So the second thing I'd like to look at in our list is communication. Mm. So if you want to be professional and come across as professional, it's an obvious that you have to be clear and respectful with your colleagues and your superiors and your peers and everyone around you. You have to be able to state your opinions clearly, right? You're essentially, anytime you're talking to someone, you're telling them a story. So keep your messages simple and then listen. And here's the trick. Be seen to listen. Nod your head when someone's talking to you. Lean into them, as Will is doing to me right now. So, yeah, I mean, this is the interesting thing. You'll never be accused of over-listening. You'll always be accused of under-listening. So that's really good. A really good communication is a professional person turns to someone and listens to them. And they don't have the words of the next sentence they're going to say forming on their lips before the other person has finished speaking. They shut up and they listen. That's professional.
Yes, there's nothing worse than someone who just looks like they're waiting for people to finish so they can talk.
Well, there's a name for those. You call those the yes, but people.
Oh, God.
Because they're about to say, yes, but, and then disagree. So they're not actually listening to you. So slowing it all down and listening to someone is professional. Third one then is diversity. So you must respect, after having also working within your company policy, is respect the diversity and differences of your colleagues. Talk to people, ask them questions, keep an open mind. We can explore a little further on diversity, but that's really what you need to follow in diversity.
Are you talking about a diversity of people, a diversity of opinion, a diversity of different working practices? You know, has that time come for us all to stop pretending we're all kind of like cookie cutter workers?
But even if you take one aspect of that, the diversity of opinion, people will hold strong opinions about what is important to them. Again, be quiet, listen, and ask them. And keep asking questions. Be like a rabbit following down the burrow. You're following the questioning. You're listening to people. You're asking more questions to open up and open up and open up. That's what the diversity is. So don't often just follow the one channel. The final one then to look at is company vision and rules, or what we might refer to as the culture of the company. And align yourself to the policies and procedures and culture, because work will be easier for you. They're devised by companies to allow the company to perform better and to be more successful. Don't try to fight that culture. In fact, work within that culture.
What if that culture doesn't align with your own values and feelings?
Well, a simple one with that is you're working in the wrong place.
Yeah.
It's you can try to mold yourself accordingly. And if not, you're working in the wrong place. That's a black and white answer.
It's very true, isn't it? Leave, get a new job, basically, is the answer there.
I've been there as a consultant. I've been in companies when I've gone to work in companies, and quite quickly I've discovered I'm not comfortable here, so I've taken myself elsewhere. Now, that's up to you. That's a level of professionalism that you then instill upon yourself. Do I want to work here?
That's a self a self-respect and it's a confidence thing. I mean, I've never had a job somewhere like that, but I've definitely had clients where I felt like that. Like, I don't feel good about, I don't even want to help these people, but I do need their money, you know, like, you know, running an agency, and like I used to run an ad agency, and I had one or two clients that I felt that way about, that I liked their products, but I didn't like their culture and their way of treating us or my staff. And I kind of had to go with it because I had to pay those staff and keep the lights on. And that can be very tricky. But over time, you become better at having the confidence to actually get those people out of your life. It just takes years. You have to grow up a bit older to do that, I think.
No, you're absolutely right. You got to pay the bills, but then also you get to a stage where your professionalism doesn't align with their professionalism. There could be chasms apart. And then you come to the stage where you may, as a consultant, fire your client.
Another area to think about is my own work style and personal brand. Is something you've obviously done quite a lot of work on, because you have a great personal brand. How do we work on that? Because that's a big part of being a professional, isn't it?
It's huge. It's the ultimate. Let's describe it in the following way. You've got to live the long game, right? You've got to think, I am whatever. Like, okay, so I'm 53. I started my long game probably 20 years ago, working as to where I want to be now. Right. So I worked my long game, and I educated myself and got my experience as to where I wanted to be. As you're doing the long game, I suspect it was easier for me than it would be for people these days, because they're expected to be always on, always accessible, always doing something, feeling uncomfortable if they don't lift the phone up or whatever it's going to be. So don't burn out is the answer. So live the long game. We'll go into it in some detail in a moment, but don't burn out as you're doing that. Do try and have a workable set of goals. Now, you know, is it going to be a relationship? Is it going to be somewhere to live? Is it going to be an experience of a holiday? Is it going to be education? But have an idea of what it is that you want and work towards it. So most people don't. Most people spend, and the reason you and I are having this conversation is to accelerate the learning of the people listening to these podcasts. So to speed up the process, you have a set of goals. You have an understanding where you're going. So let's give an example of that. I'm going to go to your house, Will. I'm in Ireland, you're in England. I don't know where you live. If I travel to every building in the UK, it'll take me about 20 years and I may not find you. Or I could get your address, lash it in the sat nav, get the ferry over and drive to your house and be there within, say, 10 hours. Because that's bringing all my knowledge into a definable goal and equipping myself to get there.
It's true. It's true. It's. I think a lot of people just struggle with knowing where they want to be in 20 years. But part of that comes back to setting out a vision for your life. And it's funny how a lot of times when you look at any area of self-help, whether it's about financial, personal, work, a lot of the advice centers around this idea of creating a vision. And that taps into things like vision boards and, you know, people having like really kind of mapping out in very visual ways where they want to be in life. What do you think of all that kind of thing?
Oh, I use that a lot. I take photographs of things I want to have or to be in, to places I want to go.
Oh, interesting.
So every time, like, I have a photograph on my desk of a valley I really like in northern Spain. So every commercial decision that I make is based on being able to go there for a month on my motorbike. So it controls everything that I do because it's right in front of me all the time. So if you can visualize where you want to be, and I'm not saying white picket fence and 2.5 children and a dog and a garden, that's twee. But if you know where you want to be, you work towards it. You work towards it.
That might be what some people want, though, you know, and you're right.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you work, like I in my coaching business, I coach a very powerful lady, and she had a very poor upbringing. And she drives herself into her goal by motivating herself away from her childhood.
Mm.
So she's extremely wealthy and extremely successful, but she didn't motivate herself to be successful. She motivated herself not to be poor. So that's a hell of a goal.
That's the opposite of a vision board, isn't it? That's like something you're always looking back at and checking whether you're further away from it.
So she absolutely knows that she does not want to be there ever. And that drives her.
It's a direction of travel, isn't it? At the end of the day.
Totally. And everything she does is in the other direction to achieve as much as possible.
Very interesting. Right. Okay. Just out of interest, what other examples have you seen of people very visually manifesting their goals?
I did work with a lady, and on her in her office every day on the whiteboard, she had drawn a tunnel. So she'd drawn the brickwork work around a tunnel as if it's a railway line leading into a tunnel. And she had drawn a black circle in the tunnel on the whiteboard. And some days the circle got bigger and some days the circle got smaller, depending on when she was getting to the end of the tunnel or not. But she never told any of her colleagues what the hell was on the whiteboard. And no one ever knew. I asked her, but she told me, but didn't tell anyone else. But some days she was visually getting closer and some days she was visually moving away from it. And it just, it instilled her to almost to up her game, work a little bit harder.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Okay, so yeah, we need to have some sort of North Star, some major waypoint in front of us to move towards. Yeah. I get that.
And even when we're doing that, sorry to cut across you, Will, even when we're doing that, consider what you tell yourself. Consider the conversations you have with yourself. So you've done it a couple of times so far in this conversation. Never use the word hopefully, right? So if I say, hopefully I'm going to conquer the French market, so you're not. No, hopefully I am. Hopefully is a terrible word. So anyone who coaches with me, I charge them €5 every time they say hopefully and we give it to charity. Student stops them saying hopefully. But hopefully is a precursor. So it sets the scene of what you're going to say. So you get people who are not sure of themselves and in being professional. And they will throw in a precursor of, this might be a bad idea, but, or you're going to think this is a crazy idea, but, and then they give their opinion. So you have the knowledge, you have some experience, you're gaining more experience. A professional person says what they have to say. They never apologize.
Yes, that does have a certain gravitas to it, doesn't it, when people do that?
Yeah. So imagine how long it's taken you to get to the position where you are in terms of education and experience. If you can't say what you have to say, if you're apologizing for saying what you need to say, that detracts from your message. A professional just says what has to be said.
Very good. That's great advice. That I massively agree with that. Okay. And what about the self-care? So let's back to the style and personal branding. You talk about self-care. What do you mean? Do you mean don't burn out, or is there some other part to that?
You'll never be. It doesn't mean staying in work all the time, always being on, always being available for telephone calls, sitting on your phone. Like you can't do that. And if you start doing that in your 20s, you're going to develop a really bad habit that you're really good at. It's going to last for the rest of your career, and you can't actually sustain that. It can't actually happen.
It's true. I mean, as a counter to that, what I've found in my life and what I've seen with my friends is that we've all, to some extent, burnt out in our 20s. But our 20-something-year-old self could handle it, recognize it, work through it. And you're right. Some people make a very particular decision to not do that anymore. And I did. And I feel like I'm quite good at self-care. I don't burn myself out. But a lot of people, you're right, don't. Those habits stick forever, you know?
So I have 5 businesses, but I've set myself up where I don't work on a Monday morning and I don't work on a Friday afternoon. And I can run 5 businesses doing that. And I don't answer my emails before 10 o'clock. And I don't answer my emails. Look at my emails, 10 o'clock, 1:45, 2 o'clock and 5. That's it. So I look after myself, but I'm still maintaining a professional business. But I'm looking after myself. I also reward myself. Now, rewarding yourself doesn't mean going out and consuming lots of alcohol. It might, but it means rewarding yourself with an experience or a piece of education or reading a good book or taking time to stop and think.
It's true. I suppose my counter was that I think people in their 20s, when you're in that early, I mean, you and I think we're quite similar with our working life and situation, and we're self-employed and we can do that, you know. When you're 23 and you're trying to gain experience and just try and get a CV built up, I think you have to kind of push to the edges of burnout. I think, and I don't think I'd recommend, I'm not sure I'd recommend a 23-year-old to not do that. I think it's good to just have a bit of a boot camp type situation for a few years.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll challenge you on that again. You could work really, really hard and not actually be achieving your goals. not actually, or you could go to the organization you work for and say, I'd like to improve myself. How can I represent the company? Where can I go where I can speak on behalf of the company, present on behalf of the company, represent the company? They'll get a massive amount of experience doing that. So there are definable shortcuts that you can take. So the harder you work doesn't necessarily mean the more successful you become.
Hello, a quick reminder from me that if you're enjoying our podcast series, why not become a member of the DMI so that you can enjoy loads more content from webinars and case studies to toolkits and more real-life insights from the world of digital marketing. Head to digitalmarketinginstitute.com/aheadofthegame to sign up for free. Now back to the podcast. So there's the self-care side of it. You talk about organizational skills as well.
Yeah. So just to finish out the self-care side, mind yourself mentally. Understand sleeping. Sleeping is so important. So if you can't sleep, you can't work, and you're likely to make a mistake. Even consider if you can't sleep. So people talk about counting sheep and all sorts of things. A great method that was given this by an air crew I was coaching a number of years ago, and they would often have to swap air crew halfway across on a long flight. And what they say, they get out of bed, and actually this only works when the bed is warmed up. So it's warmed up, it's comfortable, you're enjoying it, but you can't get to sleep. So you physically get out of bed, get the pillow, put the pillow at the other end of the bed and get back in again. And what happens is it smells the same, it feels the same, it nurtures you, and you go straight to sleep. It absolutely works. I've done it many a time when I'm on a long-haul flight and I can't sleep and I've got to work the next day. So sleep's important. Also think about your organisation skills. If I ask you now, Will, can you find your passport? Do you know where it is?
I do.
Right. A lot of people don't. It's a really important document, or your birth certificate. How organized are you in your personal life, where things are spread around, or are they focused and where they should be?
Again, I'm unusually organized, but then I'm in my 40s. Had you asked me when I was 25, I'd be like, I've no idea.
It's on top of the fridge. Everything's always on top of the
fridge.
It was,
yeah, that age.
So it's just that level of organization. And even knowing in terms of your professional diary, what are you doing tomorrow? What are you doing the day after? In many instances, I can't answer you because I don't know, because I've recorded or written it down and therefore forgotten it. So I'm challenging my energy into doing something more professional than trying to keep things in my head.
Yes. Yeah. No, I get that. That's interesting. I mean, just to go back to, I wanted to ask you a question about the, you know, people forming bad habits early on in their career, and maybe organizationally, but really back to the self-care bit. Have you had to help people in breaking those habits?
Interesting. I'm working with a very successful entrepreneur at the moment. He's 24, and he's welded to his phone. And I mean welded. And we tried something, and we were in his office, and I said, let's just stand up. And he couldn't stand up without his phone. And he almost held his phone in front of him like a shield. And I said, put your phone down. He put his phone down. He was deeply uncomfortable without his phone. And then to a new level, every time we sit and we have a conversation face to face, he puts the phone in front of us. So the obvious message is, I'm having a conversation with you, Kevin, but I'm waiting for someone else to call. It's deeply insulting to do that with someone as a layer of professionalism. But I think, I mean, he's a young man. He's just overly connected to the telephone in case he missed something, this all was on. And that's like, that was that, if he went then to pitch to a, because we're working on corporate pitches, if he goes and does that with a corporate pitch, they're not going to like him or listen to him. They're just blown out of the water.
No. And what else, you know, in terms of those habits of like always checking email and always being glued to the phone, are there any other techniques you've come across, you know, that can help people disengage a little bit and focus on their, how they can really add the highest value?
Yeah, it's taking a period of time in your day. And not they say 4 minutes, just an unusual amount of time. And not using an app, using pen and paper and writing it. Giving yourself the overview, mind mapping it if necessary, Tony Buzan's mind map, or writing it down and giving yourself the overview is a fantastic way to actually understand it. So I'll often do it myself. I have a couple of books that I'll fill in and I write my thoughts down and then I'll put it on the floor and stand and look at it, look over it, give myself the actual overview. completely changes the way you think, and it allows me to see the direction that I'm going in. So the wall of my office, I've shared this in the podcast before, the wall of my office is an entire whiteboard from floor to ceiling. And everything that I have to think about goes on the wall. So it's not in my head. And that allows me then to be able to run five entities in lots of different directions.
Yes, you talked about the overview, this mind map, which for anyone listening and not doesn't know what that is, it's like a sort of spider diagram of connected circles with lines. And it sort of shows the interrelationship of all the things in your head are on one sheet, essentially, right? Or one whiteboard or something like that.
Yeah, and it's not a list. So it's how your brain works to remember. So it's not a bullet point list. So it's really, really effective, and that allows the overview. And if you have the overview, then you can be professional in every aspect.
Okay, good. And that brings us back round to that organizational bit as well. So the next thing you talk about in terms of work style, personal brand is resilience. That's interesting. What do you mean by that?
Well, think about every morning you get out of bed, you swing out of bed, the first thing that hits the floor is your 2 feet. So when you're sitting there, 2 feet hit the floor, you go, right, what am I going to do today? What is the tenacity and doggedness that keeps you going every day? You're like one of, before the wee. So you're like one of those children's toys that you push over and they bounce back up again. What is it that drives you? What is it that, you know, what is it that keeps you going? What, and okay, people go, oh, it's the money. No, it's not. If you're not getting enough money, you go somewhere else. What is it that drives you to makes you want to record podcasts? In your case, Will, or myself as a coach, I want to help people. That's what drives me. So what is it that drives you? What is it, the inner engine?
And what does that make you resilient to?
Anything. Right? It allows you to have to have things that enter your career in terms of speed bumps or, you know, distent that happens in your career, and you handle it. You take a step back, you look at it, you look at the overview, you decide how you're going to react to it or not, and you just move beyond it. And you get good at doing that. And, you know, you consider feedback. Is feedback honest and truthful? If I'm deciding I'm going to do something with that feedback or not, you're able to move past it. This inner resilience, this bounce back.
I understand that because if someone's on a mission, they're really hard to stop. Whereas if someone's, like you say, just getting up in the morning, having breakfast and like ambling to work without really knowing why, they're very easily demotivated and put off and pushed back and knocked over, right? And if your mission, there's another thing as well, it's something greater than yourself, you know? So if your mission is to help people, if you've got a bit of a headache that day, that can't hold you back because you've got people to help and that's bigger than you and it feels bigger and more important than your headache and you just got to crack on. And
precisely.
I do understand how that forms resilience. It's interesting.
Yeah, so you get this inner motivation, and everyone has a different inner motivation, and that's what drives you forward, right? And then on top of that is your attitude to failure, right? So failure with a capital F in 2 meter high orange letters, failure, right? How you respond to failure and how you react to failure. And most people run a mile from failure. Imagine if you turned your head around in failure and you looked at failure as educating you and celebrating failure because it allows you to tell other people about the failure, the mistakes that were made and how no one else in your team will make those mistakes. So you learn professionally with failure and you celebrate the learning value of failure.
Yes, I do get that. Again, it's hard, isn't it? It depends what kind of work culture people in, what stage of their career they're in. Everything feels so high stakes sometimes. And
yeah, we had a large bank in Ireland. We got a contract for a middle management training program, and we fought with them tooth and nail to get the title. And they eventually agreed. This is a major bank in Ireland, and the title of the middle management program was, "If you're not making mistakes, you're not trying hard enough." And they were going, "We're a bank. We can't do that." It was, "Yeah, you can."
Yes, I can imagine exactly a risk-averse organisation like that, but you're absolutely right. I get that. Okay, and then finally, beliefs. You talk about beliefs being part of this whole piece of work, style and personal brand. What does that mean for you?
So you believe in yourself, believe in the people around you, believe in the people you trust. Yeah, well, if it's religion that drives you, religion keeps you going, that's fine. But to actually believe in yourself, we mentioned earlier the precursors. So the precursors are me saying, hopefully, or hey, everyone's going to think this is a crazy idea. But imagine instead saying, I could do this. Right? Having a conversation with yourself in the mirror in the hall or in your bathroom going, hey, today's a big day for me. Here we go. Let's go get a Kev. Let's go do it. So believe in yourself. And maybe that's in my 50s, I now believe in myself, but I do. I know what I can do. I know what I can't do.
Yes. And again, I think that's something that just grows with time, isn't it? But how are there any ways you can speed that process up from moving to, you know, a 20-something with acute imposter syndrome to a confident later career person?
Yeah, you can join Toastmasters or the equivalent organization, and you can learn public speaking, which allows you then to give your opinion and feel confident and calm doing so. And it opens, it's like the domino effect. It opens so many doors where you have your education, you have your knowledge, and you're able to tell people about it and project it and live it.
Interesting.
So it's all about getting experience, telling people about it, showing your knowledge. You can do it through blogging. You can do it through, you know, there's lots of different things you can do, but you're projecting yourself.
It's true, isn't it? And it's thought leadership, you know, as we call it in I suppose, in marketing and B2B marketing particularly. It's this idea that it's the people that stand up and have the confidence to say that stuff that actually get the kudos. And there may well be far more knowledgeable people that never get round to the public speaking and the blogging and all that kind of thing. But they just, you know.
Therein is the problem. I worked in a large professional services company, and the director said on day one to all of the new intake, you could be the smartest person in the room here and everyone, oh, he's talking about me. But if you can't stand up and give your opinion, you might want to find somewhere else to work. And a whole load of people look crestfallen because they knew they were smart, but they couldn't actually project it. And then you would get people who maybe didn't have half the knowledge they had, and they were like, hey, everyone. And they seemed to get ahead faster because they were better at communicating it. So the self-belief.
Yes, I agree. And definitely that's been the case in my own career for sure. Okay, what's Toastmasters? Just give us a rundown of what that...
Toastmasters would be... It's toastmasters.ie in Ireland. I suspect it's .com. And what they do is they help you prepare your presentation skills. So every week you go along and make a small presentation, and you get a little bit of positive feedback. And then the next week you do another presentation, but it's in a very nurturing environment. I coached a chap a number of years ago in Ireland, and he couldn't talk to anyone. He'd never actually left the county in Ireland he lived in. And I got him to join Toastmasters. And 3 years later, he's the president of the local chapter because it just allowed him to blossom. So he had all his knowledge, but he couldn't get it across. And now he is. He'd never left Ireland either. And I got him work experience in St. Petersburg, Bombay and New York. And travel is part of it as well. Get to go and learn other cultures, other experiences.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you have any specific techniques for building confidence?
Imagine interacting with someone. Imagine, like, we're meeting, okay, we're going to do two things. We're going to meet someone online and we're going to meet someone in person. Right? The amount of people you meet, if you're shaking hands with someone and they completely muck it up, they give this sort of royal family grabbing the finger sort of thing. People judge you by your handshake. Because you don't speak, you offer the hand first and then you speak. So the first point of human contact is a handshake. How's your handshake? You know, it should be facing the person. The hand should be facing the person. You're aiming for the fleshy part of the thumb. We actually join together. You shake hands firmly, right? Then you introduce yourself. The amount of people who don't introduce themselves. The amount of people who introduce themselves and leave out their surname or giggle at their own name. If I laughed at your name, you'd hit me. But someone who could be nervous giggling their own name. So being able to say who you are and what you do and what you can do for that person, rather than mumbling and skipping over things and hello, my name is, oh, your name is, hello, my name is, you know, just being able, like, it's the James Bond approach. It's Kevin Reed, you know, professional coach, Digital Marketing Institute. There you go. That's an introduction.
The name's Reed, Kevin Reed.
Yeah, you've got the voice, but that's it. So even that basic introduction, and then let's bring that to online. How do you introduce yourself online? How do you make an impression online? Because everyone sits and looks at each other. So all you do is you give a little wave. No one ever waves online. You give a little wave. So anyone that joins the call, when you and I and your colleagues were starting this call today, when I joined the call, I waved at everyone. You know, a little wave. The first person to wave is in charge of the online call. That's really professional. And then what you find is the other people on the call, everyone starts waving at each other, but they don't do it online because everyone just sits as statues and stares at the screen.
Yes. Yeah. People can be a little bit kind of struggle to be forthcoming in Zoom calls. I've noticed that for sure. And what about believing in yourself? Are you a big believer in this kind of like affirmations tactics around sort of looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I can do this, I've got this, I am amazing, or that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, you do have a quiet word with yourself when you're about to go and do something spectacularly stupid or really brave. You do have a little, right, Kev, here we go. You know you can do this. You'll have a conversation with yourself in your head or a couple of sentences going, you can do this. You've educated yourself. You've got your experience. You've got your knowledge. You're confident. Go do it. All right. So I did that one time. I was speaking in a conference in Greece, and 5,000 people in the audience. And I had gone in the night before, practiced my speech as the MC for the day. And I stood outside and I gave myself the adrenaline shakes, and then I went in and did it. And I had a little conversation with myself and I had a great time.
Yeah.
You know? So you do talk to yourself. And the most powerful person talking to yourself is yourself. Because what you don't want to happen is to be lying in bed at night after not doing something and looking at the ceiling and going, I should have done that. Oh, I should have done that. Because then you start to hate yourself. Instead of going, Kevin, you can do this. Go do it.
Yes, it's generally a better gamble to make, to just push yourself forward to things you're not quite sure you can do.
Yeah, so it's
because you're right, you'll always kick yourself for not trying.
Oh, and the worst, you'll hate yourself then, but you put yourself outside of your comfort zone, slightly outside of your comfort zone. Then you go, hey, that's okay. Like we all of us can remember the first time we had to make a presentation and the heart-rending feeling of, oh my God, and everyone's staring at me and I think they're going to start throwing tomatoes at me. But that's not the case. And then the second one is easy, and then you gain your experience, and then you learn all the little professional tips and tricks of making presentations or whatever the task may be.
Yes, exactly. But you know, that's great. I absolutely agree with that. But some people would really struggle with motivating themselves. They need some sort of external validation, you know, just to get the kind of fire going, if you like. How can people kind of get that in a professional context? Can you ask for it? I mean, how do you kind of confirm that you're doing well?
Okay, well, the first part of the answer to that is I can't answer that question because everyone's motivation is their own. So some people motivate themselves not to be poor. Some people motivate themselves to be better looking, smarter, you know, live further away, whatever it's going to be. So everyone's motivation is completely different.
How do we get that validation that we're doing well and allow ourselves to feel like, do you know what, I've actually got this and I should be confident?
It's an interesting coaching question to ask someone, what does success look like to you? And people could be working really, really hard towards a goal, but they don't actually know what the world looks like for them when they get there. They've never thought of it. So what does success look like? And the further question is, how long will it take you to get there? What's the cost of getting there in terms of financially, relationship, duration? You know, with all these different, how will you know when you're successful? And, oh yeah, that's a good question. Never thought of that. But their entire body and soul is working towards being, in their mind, successful. But what does it look like when you get there? Haven't thought about that. And we could be talking about something that's taken someone 15 years to do, but they don't actually know where they're getting to.
Yeah, I know. And they don't know if they're on track for that. And so I suppose what I'm getting at is some people, you know, in a workplace just need to know that, you know, I've been in this job for like 6 months now. Am I doing a good job? Should I still feel like lacking in confidence? Have I got this, you know?
You can talk to your manager and you're going to have, like, if you think about it, your manager, he or she may have to find a place and time to say, Kevin, I need to give you some feedback. I need to have a conversation with you. And that might be difficult for your manager to find the right time. Or you could speed up the process. You could say to your manager, where am I making mistakes? Pardon? Where am I making my mistakes? Where would you like to see me improve? Well, great, Kevin. Now you've mentioned that. I think at meetings you could stop doing whatever that is. So you speed up the process by asking. So it's feedback.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I suppose... Yeah.
And then that allows you then to speed up the process and make yourself more professional faster.
You might not like some of the stuff you hear, but that's the point.
It's knowledge is power, right? So then you can decide if you're going to do something about it or not, right? So I've story from my own business. We got ourselves a huge contract a number of years ago with a very large office cleaning company, 7,000 employees, and we went and met the CEO and everything was fine. We'd been shaking hands and I asked him, is there anything you don't like? Right. So I asked a further question. He said, actually, yeah, we don't like your partner. I went, oh, that's okay. You'll never see him again. But they didn't. He was ex-military and overbearing. So I said, it's no problem. And I told my partner, he said, no problem. And they never saw him again. But I asked and found out the one thing that they didn't like. So sometimes feedback can be uncomfortable, but you have it's up to you to decide what you're going to do with it or not.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so still thinking of this personal brand that we're building up professionally. How about like dress code, hygiene? Does that still matter if I'm working remotely or hybrid, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you feel better if you look after yourself. You feel better if you go and you have a shower and you tidy yourself up and then you sit down. You physically feel better than if you've been wearing the same clothes for a week. You feel better. It's like people wearing uniforms feel powerful and strong. So you give yourself the uniform of feeling good, well presented. You look better, you feel better.
I mean, I sometimes wear aftershave for a Zoom call. No one can smell me, but, you know, it just makes me feel good.
But you can, you know, and the person who's in your life, when you pass by them, they go, oh, you smell nice. You go, oh, I feel good. Even though if you're just going in to have a Zoom call in the kitchen, you still feel better. And it makes you think professionally, So I am dressed in business or semi-business attire today for a podcast because it makes me think differently.
Yes, I get that. And obviously we're all working in the real world and the non-digital world quite a lot again. To what extent does it matter there? Is it okay to be the kind of the scruffy genius? Or
depends on the culture of the organization. It depends on the culture of the organization. I can only answer through my own experience. If I'm a consultant going in to give advice in a company and to work with the people, I won't dress the same as the people in the company. I'll dress one step above because I've got to maintain some authority. So I don't dress the same to maintain authority. That's just me. Right. So it is interesting. I did work in a mine in Ireland and I had to wear a visitor's jumpsuit, which was white. And everyone else was orange, so you could spot me a mile off. So I actually went and did my training so I could wear an orange jumpsuit with everyone else. And then people listened to me a little bit better because I had taken the time to equip myself to be able to dress the same as them.
Right. So is it dress for the job you want rather than the job you've got?
When's the last time you wore a tie?
I don't know, 10 years? Well, the last wedding I went to, probably.
There you go. The last wedding, the same as myself. I had a wedding 2 weeks ago, but I haven't worn a tie for a decade before that. Right. That, and it tends to be really just people in the legal profession wear ties now when they're in business situations. Everyone else is almost smart casual, but perhaps still with a suit. But it's to work with the culture of the organization.
Yes, absolutely. Right. So thinking of all these things we've put under this umbrella of like work style and personal brand, in your work, have you seen any major differences between very young employees and the more senior ones in their approach to all this stuff we've just talked about?
It's interesting in the more formal environments. Usually for very informal environments, when I say like professional services companies or law firms, the better dressed an employee, the more junior they are. So the graduates in you intake are wearing the 500 euro suit and the 500 euro shoes, and they are so well dressed. And then usually the further you go up in the company, people are more casual. So it's just an interesting, you must have just started in the company. How can you tell? Well, you're so well dressed.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that. I didn't expect you to say that. But yes, I can imagine that's true.
What did you expect me to say?
I don't know, really. I don't know. I suppose that does make sense, doesn't it? But what about the other stuff that we talked about, sort of like organisational skills, self-care, resilience? Do you think do you see a big difference in those things between the generations?
Yeah. It's the thing we touched on earlier about always being on. So this thing, I have to always be on, always be looking out, always be on the job. I'll get extra bonus points if I'm seen to be logging on late at night. No, absolutely not, because you'll burn out. You'll get the bad habit you're really good at, you'll burn out. So there's this idea that you have to work so hard to get ahead of everyone else. And I think that is detrimental. That's detrimental to your professionalism.
With that kind of, yeah, addiction to technology. Yes, it definitely.
Well, it's a, not just addiction to technology, it's addiction to work.
Yeah.
You know, work really, really long, long hours when you really shouldn't, because you get to a point, if you're working more than, say, 7 hours a day, you're not really going to be very nimble in your brain and nimble in your thinking after 8 hours and 9 hours.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in digital marketing, your performance will taper off and you'll make a mistake.
Indeed you will. And I've definitely been there. Okay, so what other etiquette or behavior have you seen change or develop over the last few years since COVID, which has obviously been a major
yes.
inflection point with all this stuff?
Indeed. Well, it's this, the one we all have loved to hate. Could you turn your camera on? I prefer not to. Okay, so we're going to talk for whatever period of time and I'm just looking at a screen, you know? The cameras being off is a big one, especially online. Not answering questions, just sitting and looking. So I would deliver a huge amount of online communications training to professional services companies. I could have 30 people online, 30 people on the course. I ask a question and everyone sits and looks at me. And these are people who have just qualified and are now going on to get their next piece of education while working in the company. And I'm asking them questions and they're just sitting and looking at me. Now that they don't, then we have to sort of pause the course and have a conversation with them and go, do you realize how that makes you look? Imagine if I was the managing partner and I asked you a question, would you just sit and look at me? No, you wouldn't. So why are you doing it to me? And it's to have that sort of, and oh yeah, now that you say that, you know, other things of having no body language online either. So they just sit and stare. So even the little wave we talked about earlier really makes it look different and like using your hands to describe yourself and being seen to do so online. So you need overt body language when you're online. And then the other thing is, which you see a lot of, people have now forgotten that they're online. They've forgotten that this camera that's pointing at Kevin and the camera that's pointing at Will, we're actually closer than we would be if we physically met. So people forget that. And I have a guy who works with, and he does a big yawn to the camera. And like everyone can see down his throat. And someone has said it to him, but he's forgotten it. And he keeps doing it. And it's awful. So yeah, big stretch and big yawn and yawns right down the camera. Oh, God almighty, it's terrible. So things can be amplified and also your background.
Oh.
When online, especially if you're in your bedroom and you've got a collection of nice posters, remember your background. Yeah. So it's those.
Yes, it's true that I the background thing is one thing that surprises me continuously, actually. I don't I don't get it why people don't think about that too much. But
I think that's it, but it's the complacency. People live so much of their lives online now, they forget.
They do. Can we just have a look in particular how this applies to those who are kind of in the middle stage of their career or later, how might they consider moving upwards? And how does professionalism and the need for professionalism and the kind of flavor of professionalism need to change or adapt as you get into those more senior stages of your career? Or does it?
If you're professional the whole way through. So, okay, there are two ways answering that. You become more professional when you get promoted. What? That sounds crazy. You should be professional the whole way through. In fact, what happens when you go up the management chain is you get more confident. That's all really happens. And you're able to project your knowledge, say what you have to say, lead others, motivate a team. So you become leader and a manager. That's what really happens, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I see that. And that comes naturally with time and age, doesn't it? But I suppose also...
Well it doesn't. I mean, the courses, okay, shameless plug for the Digital Marketing Institute, the content that you have, if I'd had that when I was in my 20s, my life would have been completely different because you now have access to this knowledge. So if you consider the differences between being junior and senior, it's really just the confidence, your own ability to project action, say what you have to do what you have to do, and keep doing it.
Yes. Yeah, that absolutely is true. Do you think that there's a lot of myths, aren't there, about young people, Gen Z, that they are very demanding and can be a bit, I suppose, sort of like diva-esque in some ways, perhaps. I'm not sure I totally buy any of that generational bias. I think those things have just always been around and are usually nonsense. But do you, in your work, see any obvious differences between how polite and professional and easy to work with the different ages are?
Oh, yeah. We use a lot of, in our business, we use a lot of technical people. I don't know how to quite describe it. Let's say that we get a lot of advice on Facebook and Instagram and things like that from consultants. And a lot of the younger ones don't want to meet us ever. Now, I'm a bit old school. I like to meet someone who I'm giving money to, even if they live in the same city. And no one wants to meet us. They all want to do everything online. It's like, that's an absolute no-no. So if you're not going to meet me, we won't do business with you. That sounds crazy, but that's a big thing. And that's happened a lot in terms of consultants selling the sort of skill set that the Digital Marketing Institute is about, and they won't meet us, which is terrible.
Yes. Yeah. I think, yeah, a lot of us, particularly the younger ones, has probably got hooked on the convenience of online conversations, I'd say.
So you and I earlier had talked about some of the differences between being junior and senior. So if you want to move up the management chain, you want to move up, the first thing you need to do is continuous professional development, CPD.
Yeah.
Right. You need to have new skills. You need to stay relevant in your field, and not only staying relevant in your field, but keeping a watching brief in your field and being ready at any time to quote and share your knowledge. So the really impressive people that you meet in life are those, when asked a question, don't have to revert to notes or their phone. Off the top of their head, they can say whatever pertinent piece of information happened that day and quote it. That's professional.
Yeah. No, I get that.
And then once you get that education, then comes the big four-letter word, and the big four-letter word is more. More of everything. More practicing decision-making, more achieving through the actions of others, more planning your work, more risk-taking, more taking decisions, more taking the blame and learning from the blame, more getting things done, more growing a winning team, more. Just more of everything. And that's the practice that we spoke about earlier. The thing that sets you apart as a professional is you go the extra. You take initiative, you go beyond your job description whenever possible, you act beyond your authority for the good of the company, the good of the organization, you seize the initiative and you be proactive. That's professional.
And everyone wants to work with that person.
Yeah. Oh, you know what happens? That person becomes attractive.
Yeah.
People are attracted to you because you're a leader. You know what has to be done. You lead, you're tough but fair. People like to work with you. You respect them, you motivate them. You're attractive.
Okay. So to wrap up, I'm going to ask you our top three tips question that we ask all of our guests. What are the top three things that someone listening to this episode can do immediately after it ends to help them feel more professional?
So the operative word in that sentence, and thank you, is the word feel. This is how you feel about yourself. Number one, be self-aware. What you say, how you dress, how you perform, keep up standards and mean what you say. Practice self-awareness. Second thing, be able to describe yourself to yourself, right? Who you are, what you do, not just for a networking event, but you're keeping this spool in your head going about who you are, what you do, and the direction you're going in. So you're aligning yourself, you're keeping on track to the story that you tell yourself every day. So be able to describe yourself. And the third one, and most important for any professional in any field, pay more attention. Pay more attention to the messages you are sending and the messages that are being sent to you that you're receiving. So as I mentioned earlier, you'll never be accused of over-listening. So pay more attention.
Great advice. And I think that's fantastic. Kevin, thank you so much. I think we've taken enough of your time. I really appreciate all of your insight. It's fascinating. I could talk to you all day about it.
That's great, Will. Thank you very much.
It's been a real pleasure. Well, of course, one final question. Where can people find you and connect with you online?
They can find me online at kevinjreed.ie and pst.ie for personalskillstraining.ie. It's my training and my coaching company. I'd be delighted to talk to you then.
Great stuff. We'll be sure to check those out. Thanks so much again, Kevin.
Thanks, Will. Talk to you soon. Take care.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about transforming your marketing career through certified online training, head to digitalmarketinginstitute.com. Thanks for listening.